Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Football Podcast with Waseem Parkar. The focus of this episode is going to be on the battle for Champions League qualification, where I'll be reviewing the weekend's matches in the Premier League. Now, folks, for those of you who listened to my podcast before the weekend, you know my focus was on two big games. One of them, of course, a big marquee game in England, that is Liverpool versus Arsenal, and then there was Tottenham hosting in-form Everton. I also had an eye on the two Manchester sides because I thought both of them will get maximum points, further increasing the pressure on Liverpool, Arsenal and Spurs. As it turned out, the weekend opened rather unexpectedly with Manchester United drawing with a struggling Bournemouth at Old Trafford. I don't think anyone saw this coming. I certainly didn't see this coming. But it was a terrible result for Manchester United for various different reasons. First of all, they were playing against 10 men for most of the second half, and you'd expect that a team of United's quality with the players that they have would avail of such an opportunity. But instead, Zlatan Ibrahimovic missed a penalty. And crucially, Zlatan Ibrahimovic was also involved in a nasty incident in the first half. And I should make myself clear over here that Zlatan wasn't the only villain. Tyrone Mings from Bournemouth was equally culpable in some of the hideous actions that took place in the first half. For all intents and purposes, from where I saw it, Tyrone Mings intentionally wanted to put his foot on Zlatan Ibrahimovic's face, and so it was somewhat natural, though still not justified, of course, that Zlatan would try and even things out with an elbow at that corner. So United have gone from a position where they could have put pressure on Arsenal and Liverpool, are now again in the chasing pack. And you start to wonder if they will ever come out of that sixth position. It's all well and good being unbeaten for so long, but they've been in sixth since November now, and various opportunities to progress further up the table have been squandered. And remarkably, for a team that is not facing a lot of scrutiny, apparently the media narrative seems to be that United are playing well. They are a big club again because of Jose Mourinho. But they have as many wins as they have draws at Old Trafford. And that's really quite unacceptable. And I think they deserve all the criticism that they get. And when even Jose Mourinho is humbled by this streak, when he says we deserve to draw points, then you know that something is seriously wrong. Quite noticeably, Paul Pogba was atrocious in an attacking sense. He had some chances to score. He missed. His final pass was terrible throughout the game. So United dropped two huge points. And not to mention that Zlatan could very well, now that the FA has charged him, could very well end up missing three games. Now, one of them will be in the FA Cup against Chelsea, and then two Premier League games. So considering how important a role Zlatan has played in United defeating teams in the Premier League and getting those extra points, I think that's huge and further puts pressure on United in the chase for the top four. So the weekend started off badly for Manchester United. The other Manchester City, finished the weekend with a convincing win at Sunderland. First of all, I should say that it was actually quite nice to watch a match at the Stadium of Light, where the atmosphere was absolutely awesome. The home fans really backed the team, and Sunderland responded to the fans. I think they gave City some trouble. Jermaine Defoe hit the post, and they played with a lot of heart. They didn't give up, but ultimately City's quality told. And now it's four straight wins for the Citizens, and they've conceded only one goal in that run. So they've definitely become more solid and more efficient. I think the motivation is back for a lot of the players. I think even John Stones has improved a lot. He's not making silly decisions from the back. And of course, Willy Caballero as goalkeeper has definitely done a better job than Claudio Bravo. I think that's added some solidity as well. And then going forward, Sergio Aguero is a man reborn. He scored again. And as I said in the podcast previewing the weekend, Leroy Sané is just getting better with each passing game. I like his decision making. It's not just about pace. There's also smoothness to him. There's a smoothness in the way he beats the opposing fullbacks, and his goal was so well taken. So it was a joy to watch. So overall, a very convincing City win, and it's a sort of win, you know. And I thought this the last time I saw them in the Premier League as well, when they away to Bournemouth and they won 2-0. These are the kind of wins that really elite teams specialize in at the business end of the campaign. And maybe City, this season, of course, the Premier League title really looks beyond reach anyone, because Chelsea are so good and they are leading from the front. But the fact that City are finishing well, I still think bodes well for the future, especially if they can make good acquisitions in the summer. So those were the two Manchester clubs. Tottenham against Everton. Now, in the preview podcast, I talked about the fact that how this fixture recently just seemed to be defined by draws. As it turned out, Tottenham did everything possible to make this one a draw as well, despite them completely dominating this game. And 3-2 was honestly a very flattering scoreline for Everton. This match really should have been more like a 5-1 or a 4-0. Like, Spurs were on top. Dele Alli, Christian Eriksen, and Moussa Dembele were just superb in midfield. The pressing was relentless. And of course, Harry Kane is in such a rich vein of form, and he's scoring goals from all over the place, all kinds of goals, long range shots, classy finishes, headers. That being said, I do think Joel Robles should have saved the first shot that came, that he conceded a goal on. That really, most top goalkeepers would have had that as bread and butter, but he didn't. But that should not detract anything from Harry Kane's performance and Spurs' performance overall. They were just brilliant. What was surprising for me, that considering Everton were in such good form, and they came into the game playing so well in 2017, unbeaten in the Premier League, I was surprised that Koeman resorted to such a defensive approach. Now, keep in mind, Ronald Koeman was signed precisely for this fact, that he was considered an upgrade on Roberto Martinez, because Koeman could adjust to his opponent. So in some ways, you got to give it to him that he did try to make an adjustment to combat Spurs' strengths. But that adjustment was starting Gareth Barry in midfield, you know. And I talked about this in the preview podcast, how Morgan Schneiderlin and Idrissa Gueye would play together against Spurs' midfield. I didn't expect Gareth Barry to feature in this match, in all honesty. And I think that contributed to Everton being a bit pedestrian, a bit slow, and nullified the ability to take the attack to Spurs. And I think Everton are one of those teams, they really play their best football when they're on the front foot. And it was no surprise to me that once James McCarthy came on in the second half, they played much better and started pressurizing Tottenham. But that was too late, and if anything, even the two goals, in my opinion, that they scored seemed to be a little bit of an injustice on Tottenham's dominance. So that's Tottenham's ninth consecutive home win, folks. Now, I don't want to jump ahead of myself. Spurs have often been in an advantageous position when it comes to qualifying for the Champions League in March, and many times in relation to Arsenal, only for them to flop things up. I remember Andre Villas-Boas's first season, when they were 7 points clear of Arsenal in the middle of March, and they contrived to throw away that lead in a matter of four games. So we shouldn't be counting any chickens, but I still think this is extremely impressive. And if you look at the fixture list for Tottenham, there's only two really tough games, and both of them are at home: Arsenal and Manchester United. And Mauricio Pochettino has really made Spurs a tough team to beat in big matches, and especially at White Hart Lane. They've already beaten City and they've already beaten Chelsea. So I see no reason why they should be afraid of Arsenal and Manchester United in their current guise. Maybe one other tough game is away to West Ham, but West Ham have lost to every big team at the Olympic Stadium. So I'm feeling really good about Spurs. And I actually think in many ways, even though last season, okay, they were involved in the title chase for much longer, I actually think this season is really more of a genuine improvement because you know, they have 56 points, 11 games left. Last season, they finished with 70 points. I'd be surprised if they got less than 77 this season. And I think Pochettino will genuinely aim for more. But I think if they get anywhere between 77 to 80 points and qualify for the Champions League, it's a huge achievement. And folks, you've got to remember that in this modern Premier League era and the era of the Champions League, Spurs have never had two successive qualifications to Europe's premier competition. So the process of becoming a big club is gradual. And I think if they do that this year, in many ways, for me, that's an even more impressive campaign than last year because it validates last season as a building block rather than it being a flash in the pan. But I digress over here. I do think Tottenham are in a very good position to solidify their place in the top four, especially looking at the concerns that the other teams have, notwithstanding, of course, for Spurs, any injuries to their key players. So the final match I want to talk about was the big game, Liverpool versus Arsenal. And folks, I said this in the preview podcast that I think despite knowing what was going to happen, you knowing what was going to happen, the whole world knowing what's happened, everything transpired as everyone predicted. Liverpool won 3-1. Liverpool pressed right of the blocks, went at Arsenal, and Arsenal buckled. And Liverpool won 3-1. No surprise over here. The big talking point, of course, was the fact that Arsene Wenger decided not to start with Alexis Sanchez, and it backfired terribly. Now, the tactical decision that Wenger gave in his post-match conference was that he wanted to have a more direct threat with the likes of Olivier Giroud and Danny Welbeck. There may be some logic in the sense that Olivier Giroud offers a more direct threat aerially, but that completely neglects the fact that Alexis Sanchez is one of the most direct players in the Premier League. And, you know, the defenders, Ragnar Klavan and Joel Matip, when they looked at the team sheets and realized they wouldn't be coming up against Alexis Sanchez, I think they must have felt really, really good. So the fact that Sanchez didn't start obviously contributed to Arsenal having their typical deer-in-the-headlights moment in a big game. And in the second half, when Sanchez came on, they did make Liverpool uncomfortable, but you always felt Liverpool had the edge on the counter, so there was no surprise that Liverpool scored a late goal to win the match 3-1. So Liverpool leapfrogged Arsenal into the top four. That being said, where does this leave Liverpool and Arsenal? In all honesty, it's very unclear. You know, you still can't write the Gunners off. You know, they've come back from worse positions when it's come to Champions League qualification. Although this year, it does appear that it is the toughest field to break through. And any lapses will probably punish more severely than in previous seasons. But they have come back from these positions. And despite being 2 points behind Liverpool, they do have a game in hand. So all is not lost. And with Liverpool, you know, another great performance against a top six team. They've played 9 matches, won 5, drawn 4. They're unbeaten against the top six. They just have to become more consistent now. Over the past month, this theory has been developed that Liverpool struggle against smaller teams. I think that's an oversimplification of things. We must remember that, after all, early in the season, Liverpool thrashed Watford 6-1, Hull 5-1, Leicester 4-1. They've beaten all sorts of teams and scored all sorts of goals. What would probably be more accurate about Liverpool is that they are a team that need to score early in the game. Because once they score early in the game, the confidence that they play with just increases and surges. And I think that's a big part of their game plan. If you shut out Liverpool in the first half, I think the chances of beating Liverpool grow exponentially. And that's what's happened in recent matches against Hull and Leicester City. So what's crucial now, yes, Liverpool do have that momentum back. They have that edge over United because United dropped those unexpected points. But next weekend, when Liverpool play Burnley in the Premier League, I think it's very important that they win that match. It's at Anfield because all the other contenders for the top four are playing in the FA Cup. Now, I know some people view games in hand as an advantage, and they very well can be. But I'm from the camp that points on the board is much better because sometimes with games in hand, most of them are often played in midweek. You never know if fatigue or injuries could play a factor. So getting the points on the board is absolutely crucial because even if it results in an artificial position, that points on the board means the pressure's on the teams that actually have the game in hand. So, folks, despite some huge results, I don't think we have any clarity on how the top four are going to end up. It's going to be very interesting, and I expect lots of twists and turns and lots of shifts of momentum going forward as we end up with the business end of the season. So that's it for another episode of the Football Podcast with Wasim Perkar. I'll be back with more very soon.